Hi, thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Craig Farron, and I am the Senior Product Director for Expense Applications at CyberShift. CyberShift, we're a leading developer of expense management and workforce management solutions. Our expense management solutions are designed for mid to large size global organizations, offering our clients ease of use, flexibility, and depth of functionality while reducing all overall spend and improving compliance. We are very pleased today to welcome one of our premier partners, BMO Spend and Payment Solutions, who are a top 10 commercial card provider in North America, to present today's webinar titled Corporate Cards, How to Optimize Your Program Performance. This is definitely a very timely topic, as we are often asked by our clients and prospects that we're out meeting, basically for recommendations on improving the performance of their corporate card programs. So today, the experts from BMO are joining us to provide both insight and guidance on this topic. Before we begin the presentation and introduce our presenters from BMO Spend and Payment Solutions, I'd like to go through just a few housekeeping items. The presentation today will run for approximately 45 minutes, with time at the end for your questions. All questions will be handled directly through the live meeting console. To pose a question for presenters, simply go to the Q&A section at the top menu item of your live meeting window. Type in your question, hit enter, or click on ask, and that will provide the question back to the presenters to review at the end. Your question will then be addressed during our Q&A session. The audio portion for today's presentation is on listen-only mode. So without any further ado, joining me today from BMO Spend and Payment Advisors are Scott Baxter and Ravinder Gill. Just to give you a little bit of background on both Scott and Ravinder, Scott is a director at BMO Spend and Payment Advisors. For the past 19 years, he has gained a deep knowledge of B2B cards, the commerce and payable industries, and is focused on delivering high-impact payable strategies and solutions to buying and selling organizations in both the private and public sectors. As director of BMO Spend and Payment Advisors, Scott manages a BMO consulting team whose focus is to provide extensive analytical benchmarking and spend analysis to help customers maximize their cards and overall B2B payment goals and objectives. Ravinder Gill is a senior consultant at BMO Spend and Payment Advisors. She works extensively with corporate card clients to analyze their spend management needs and processes, offering actionable recommendations tailored to a client's specific business needs. Having worked primarily in client-facing roles, Ravinder is adept at identifying factors that inhibit an organization's potential and the key levers for change. Prior to joining BMO, Ravinder held the position of senior consultant with a management consulting firm where she assisted private sector clients in redesigning work processes. And at this point, I would like to turn things over to Scott Baxter from BMO to start off our presentation. Thank you, Scott.
Thanks, Craig. Ravi, and I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with the group today that you've assembled. The focus of today's presentation is to share with you some very simple best practices that are designed to help you optimize your T&E card program. The focus is on travel and entertainment cards, or travel cards, as opposed to purchasing cards. We also specialize in that area and will be able to provide our contact information to you at the end of this presentation if anyone has any follow-up questions that we don't cover today or time prohibits. So feel free to reach out to us after this conversation if there's any follow-up. While many of you are familiar with some of the best practices that we're going to share today, our objective is not to bore you with a lot of detailed discussions on several of the more obvious best practices, but rather our objective is to share several really simple and possibly lesser known or overlooked nuanced best practices that can be applied, you know, almost immediately after this call, easily, and we hope that they'll yield high-impact results for you in optimizing your T&E card program. The key to identifying new opportunities or missed potential for optimizing your card program really relies on an organization's ability to capture as much spend data through the card program as possible. So to start, we'll be discussing some quick hit opportunities intended to maximize the spend capture through your T&E card program. Then from there, once the spend capture is optimize, and you've gotten to that point, we're going to address the next challenge, which becomes how to be able to effectively and efficiently analyze that data quickly to drive both your travel and card policy compliance and control, how to maximize your organization's card rebate earning potential, and how to identify some misuse within the organization in the simplest way possible. So without further ado, I'll turn things over to Ravi, who will be taking you through the first part of the agenda and starting us off with a polling question. Ravi.
Thank you, Scott. So we all know the numerous benefits associated with the corporate card program. These include efficiency savings driven from the reduction of manual transaction processing, savings resulting from increased spend visibility, for example, the use of spend data to negotiate greater discounts with preferred suppliers, and of course, last but definitely not least, rebates. To kickstart today's session, we'd like to ask our webinar attendees how their organizations have encouraged the use of corporate cards. Specifically, how would you characterize your organization's tonality in mandating the use of the corporate card versus personal cards? And as you can see in the poll choices, the first one is strongly mandated, for example, must use corporate card whenever possible. Second option is if cards are highly encouraged, so they're only moderately mandated. Or last, if there is no mandate at all. And once we have the results, Scott will present those.
I see the results coming in. I think we'll leave the poll open for a few more minutes. Or
good tie.
Yeah. Okay, I think we're just about there. Well, it's still coming through. Give it another 10 seconds.
That would be good.
Okay.
Okay, so we look like we have a strong 37% in the strongly mandated, followed closely by no mandate at all, which actually is a bit surprising because we generally do see in our experience a mix of either moderately mandated or strongly mandated. So that's why this poll is very important to understand where you, our industry, is currently standing. As referred to in Scott's introduction, while working with over 50 organizations in multiple industries and representing both public and private sectors, the Spend and Payment Advisors Group has identified key best practices to maximize spend capture on the corporate card program. Because as we all know, the more transactions that go through the card program versus the traditional method, the organization will capture more of the benefits we mentioned earlier. These best practices will help your organization identify T&E spend that is ideal for card, and importantly, that is fairly easy to move on to the card. The first best practice we'd like to share is to determine how your T&E card program compares to those of your peer groups. The goal really here is to identify opportunity for growth and to benchmark against organizations that have optimized their programs. This benchmark will provide you with a snapshot of where you are now and where you could be in the near future. The second analysis that we recommend is also an easy report to run, and this would be to identify a method of payment analysis with your travel agency. And really the goal here is to identify all the payment vehicles that are being used to book T&E related expenses. So the report would identify whether a BMO MasterCard, whatever type of Visa or American Express was being used. And the key really here is for organizations that have mandated the card, this report will allow you to see where there is slippage or where there is spend occurring that's against company policy as you've mandated the use of the corporate card. For organizations that are either encourage the use of corporate cards or don't mandate it at all, this is an opportunity for you to see where you have potential to move the spend onto card and what the X amount of savings would be related to efficiencies and Y amount in rebate. Really, you could build a business case with this report if you so chose to either implement a strongly mandated card or a truly mandated card. Now, The third best practice is to compare GL spend by category with T&E reporting to identify slippage. This is specifically capturing the scope of spend that is currently not being put on through the corporate card. So although you may have identified a series of categories that are T&E and should be going on card, it's possible that you have other categories of T&E spend that are still on the GL but have not been introduced into the corporate card program. So this is another great report to run to find some low-hanging opportunities. Another powerful tool that you can use to find low-hanging opportunities to maximize your spend capture is to compare your T&E card data with accounts payable to see if there are any vendors that are being paid both by the traditional check method as well as card. Typically in our group, we call this report common vendors. So it goes without saying that if we have these vendors that are currently being paid by card, they should continue to be paid by card and that less check spend should occur with these vendors. So another easy-to-run report which can yield great opportunity for your card program. And lastly, as Scott mentioned, our goal is not to provide difficult best practices that are hard to implement, but rather what we'd like to do today is to identify the easy-to-run, easy-to-implement best practices that you could do right away and that you will actually yield results with. And the last one, and an important one, is to cross-reference your cardholder listing with active travel agency profiles to identify gaps. The goal really here is to identify travelers who possibly should have a corporate card but do not. And depending on your organization, what we've seen in the industry is that any individual that travels more than 2 or 3 times a year should ideally have a card. In some organizations, for an individual that only travels once a year, it's considered not enough to have a corporate card, and rather they would bill their T&E expenses related to air through a centralized air account. So in moving forward, these 5 best practices are designed to help you identify existing spend opportunity for your corporate card program, enabling you to drive greater efficiencies and rebates. The next polling question is about rewards programs, a tool used to encourage spend on the card program. Our question to you is, do you allow employees to enroll in your corporate card's reward program? First option is no, our card mandate is sufficient and we block rewards participation. Second, yes, we strongly encourage the corporate card usage and employee is allowed to enroll in the rewards program. The third option is our card program is not strongly mandated and employees are not allowed to enroll in the rewards program. And lastly, our corporate card provider does not offer a rewards program or has a very limited rewards program. It will take us a couple of seconds to poll this question.
And it looks like we have a great mix here.
And I will now pass it over to Scott, who will dive deeper into the role rewards play in driving spend onto the card.
Perfect. I'm going to give the poll just a couple more seconds. There are more tallying up. About 10 more seconds. Somebody changed their answer. And here are the results. We have about 20% do not mandate the program and block rewards participation among their employees. But another third are encouraging corporate card usage strongly and allowing employees to participate in the rewards program. And then a small percentage don't have a mandated program and don't allow employees to participate in rewards. And then finally, almost 40% are saying that they don't have a rewards program with the provider that they have today. So we'll get a little bit more into that as we move into the next part of our presentation, where we're talking about driving cooperative compliance within the T&E policy. One of the things that you'll often hear from card providers is that the simplest and most effective way to drive spend capture is to mandate your program. And while We agree with that, and we think that's true. It's not always possible to outright mandate a program in every case, and I think that this poll just supports that factor. When you consider the line of business that your organization may be in, and also the nature of or your organization's culture, sometimes that prohibits the ability to outright mandate a program. Over the years, BMO and Diners Club has coined the phrase called cooperative compliance, which essentially focuses on some of the positive reinforcement aspects of driving compliance in spend capture versus the negative stick approach. There are obviously some disciplinary best practices that can be used, but for right now, focusing on the positive, how do you drive cooperative compliance, especially if you can't mandate a program? We recently conducted a study for a customer who was switching to our program from one of our competitors and wanted to weigh the value of whether or not they should adopt a rewards program with us. In this case, it's the Diners Club with MasterCard acceptance club rewards program. And the question was not what happens if we switch providers, will all our card members lose their rewards points? That wasn't the case because they could have transferred their points from their old program to whichever airline or redemption partner under the old program that they preferred. The question was more so, if we continue to offer rewards to our employees, is that the best way to approach things with not being able to strongly mandate the program versus the trade-off with earning a higher rebate for the company? Because obviously, you know, if you participate in a rewards program, there's typically you will earn a slightly lower rebate to cover the cost of that. So as we went into the study, we looked at 50 of the largest Diners Club MasterCard T&E programs where club rewards were available, and we found some very interesting results. About 86% of the participants in the study allowed rewards presentation, and of that, 27% of the cardholders who participated in the rewards program drove 63% of the book charge volume or the spend capture. So what does that mean? That means that really the road warriors, about a third of the cardholder base, drove well over half of the volume and the spend capture for the organization. So given that it's a road warrior, you come to some other interesting dimensions that come out of that too. For the programs where rewards was offered, the average spend was $12,400, whereas on the programs where rewards was blocked, the average spend was half of that, about $6,600. Oftentimes, we use average spend as one of the performance indicators, and the best in class hovers somewhere around $12,000 to $13,000 in average spend on card. And you can see, obviously, with where rewards program was blocked, that may imply that there was slippage on the program where rewards was not allowed and where there wasn't an effective mandate. So basically what we see is that participation in the rewards program was highly prevalent among these accounts, but more importantly, the average spend, as I said, illustrates that that rewards were highly valued among those who traveled the most and drove the most spend capture. So in considering that, you obviously want to consider a robust program that has many rewards redemption options, points that don't expire, ease of redemption of the points. And most off, one thing to consider is, if you are offering a rewards program today, once you offer something, it's very hard to take it back. So think carefully when you do that. It's like anything else with an employee benefit. If it's offered 1 year and then it's taken back after that, it can be somewhat difficult and drive a lot of compliance issues. But the other thing is that when you're weighing the fact of offering rewards and the cooperative compliance that it results in, without doing that, it could actually dilute the benefit of the program when you think about not offering a rewards program for the sole purpose of maximizing your rebate. We see on average that there's about a 20 to 40% impact on rebates, meaning lower rebates, as a result of not offering rewards because of the slippage that bypasses the card capture, where people are using their personal cards as an alternative because of their loyalty to a points program. Also, consider the cost of what it takes to manage and enforce compliance where you have less cooperative compliance for your employees. So really, the choice is yours, but if you can't mandate a program effectively, a rewards program is one very impactful way, as this data shows, to help drive compliance with your prescribed corporate card program and drive spend capture and ultimately your rebate. There are other ones, too, that I think is worth sharing. I think the most interesting one of recent, not rewards related, was one company that was having some difficulty getting their employees to pay their bills on time. They adopted an automated expense reporting system and began to affect some change in terms of getting people to file expense reports on a regular basis. Unannounced and unbeknownst to the employees, after the end of the first year, there was a handful of shining stars who did their expense reports on time every month and followed the T&E policy to the letter. So unannounced, they proactively sent out a free iPad to every employee for stellar performance. So there's much more you can do besides just taking the stick approach to mandating a program. And I think we'd be remiss if we just said mandate your program to get the best results. So now that we've spoken about cooperative compliance, let's talk a little bit about best practices for optimizing your rebate. And I'll give you some examples of some experiences that we've had in the marketplace with some actual details. One is to really focus on the speed of pay and where it's most controllable. I'll give you one story of where a software company was having great difficulty in getting their employees to pay their bills on time. Again, they did the best-in-class approach, and they adopted an automated expense reporting program, which, by pre-populating the expense report, drove greater convenience and greater compliance with employees even before the expense was filed. So that was one terrific thing they did. But once they got that metric down and got things working well, the speed of pay went down substantially, and they were able to earn a greater speed of pay incentive portion of their rebate. If you're not familiar with rebate structures, typically a card provider will provide basis points back based on the amount of charge volume, but they'll also provide an additional rebate component where the faster you pay, you may earn an extra basis point for your overall average speed of pay being, you know, a certain for every day below a certain benchmark. So what this company did is they did that. They leveraged their MIS. They communicated their policy. They did great training, and things worked well. But at the end of the day, they still were not maximizing their rebate because their focus was completely on driving individual cardholder behavior. So think about other areas where you can additionally control your spend the most. And that would be, one would be a central air bill with a travel provider, as well as meeting and event cards. Typically, these cards, unlike individual cards, are centrally billed and centrally paid and controlled by one or two individuals within the organization. So when you look at monitoring the speed of pay and the performance of your individuals, you may lose sight of what you yourself as a program administrator may be able to control or somebody in your accounts payable department. In this case, the software company had two major industry events that they did every year, and that was paid through a meeting card for several hundred thousand dollars in the accounts payable department. The travel manager was focused on the individual bills, and the accounts payable department manager was working under the edict of the CFO to pay everything in 45, 60 days, somewhere around there, not realizing what the impact that had on their rebate. So by paying the meeting card expenses quickly, actually would drive substantially their rebate, and their rebate actually increased by about 43% once they started paying their meeting card as well as their central air bill. And to pay your central air bill quickly, most card providers can provide you with a very powerful reconciliation tool that will take the book data from the travel agency and the bill data from the central air bill and help you reconcile that quickly so that you can pay that, almost like a P card when you think about it. So by controlling those two areas, that gives you the great opportunity to be able to maximize your rebate. The next best practice obviously goes without saying, but it's once you've captured your spend, definitely leverage your global MIS from your card provider to help you maximize the speed of pay and your overall rebate. One thing that you can do that we've seen some customers do is that if you have a program with lots of cardholders and it's kind of hard to weed out the ones that are typically late on their expenses, we've actually suggested that you can take your hierarchy in your card reporting and create another bucket in that reporting for the problematic sort of road warrior who travels a lot. One of my customers calls it their Dirty Dozen report, and they take the most problematic cardholders and they put them in their own reporting hierarchy bucket. So it's very simple from a program administration and from a card enforcement and policy enforcement and expense reporting enforcement perspective to monitor those on an ongoing basis and very easily. Also, make full use of your 30, 60, and 90-day aging reports to proactively manage compliance. Our statistics show that once somebody goes 60 days on a report on aged expenses, they typically 75% of those, or close to 73%, slip into the 90-day bucket afterwards. So that's the magic number, is to catch that before 60 days and maybe even to customize your report to look at it at a 45-day dimension, et cetera. So that's another best practice that we've seen help manage the expenses in that respect. Also, some other things that we've seen is escalation of approvals. I know with CyberShift, most of that aging is captured up front and monitored up front, as well as the reporting that you use for your corporate card program. But there are some cases where people will go, will still pay their expenses late. One company actually mandated a program, a policy enhancement, where if your expenses were over 45 days, instead of having your usual approval manager approve your expenses, it was mandated that it go up two higher levels to the overall head of the business unit. And obviously, individual cardholders don't want to see that visibility occur, so they tend to pay their bills in that case under 45 days. So that was pretty effective. More of a stick approach, but very effective. Also, consider low-spend and no-spend cards. That is a potential risk that can really impact your rebate in terms of misuse. When we talk about cardholders, and we'll talk a little bit more about identifying misuse, but when we talk about where the misuse occurs the most times it's with that employee who does not travel often and therefore only uses their corporate card once or twice seasonally during the year. Typically, it's that employee will not be familiar with your policies and procedures and not be familiar with things such as not allowing personal spend on the card, et cetera. And let's say, you know, worst case, it gets to be holiday season. Things are a little tight on the home front with the budget. Here's a corporate card sitting here on my desk that I never use. I'll use that to buy that flat screen and or whatever, and I'll pay back the card later. Or I'll do a weekend away for my spouse, and I'll pay that back later. Typically, those don't get paid back. Although the best intent is there. And that's what results in the most credit losses that we see with employees. That and departed employees who haven't paid their bills or charged up expenses before they depart. And we'll talk about that as well. So when you look at your card MIS, if you see no-spend cards, either they're using a personal card or they don't travel, consider canceling that card and moving it to another method of payment. Same goes for low spend. Keep an eye out for the low spend transactions in your card reporting because your card reporting can show a number of transactions by employee and police that. So that's basically where we left off here. And just to revisit rewards one more time, one thing to think about when you look at a rewards program in your rebate is to consider how that's calculated. One of the misnomers that's overlooked in the industry is how sometimes with certain card providers, you may negotiate, just for the sake of illustration and ease, a 50 basis point rebate with that card provider. That rebate would be less credit losses and less the cost of the redemption of the rewards, and that's deducted at the end of the year on the back end. Just be careful of that and work with your card provider to make sure that you're monitoring that, because you may go into this thinking that you're going to have a 50 basis point rebate at the end of the year when you find out that you didn't manage credit losses, and that's maybe 10 basis points, and now it's 40, and the cost of your rewards was, let's say, 30. Surprise, you're only going to earn 10 basis points at the end of the year. We can do that on our side. What we typically, our customers prefer that we do, is that if they enroll in a rewards program, we will factor that in based on our portfolio average upfront into the rebate. So what you see is what you get, and there will be no surprises at the end of the year, especially with credit losses if you manage that with us throughout the process. So one way to think about that is to ask your card provider if you can factor that in upfront versus being surprised at the end of the year by what the rewards cost is. So now we've talked about rebates, and there are a number of different other things we can do to maximize rebates. Let's talk a little bit now about best practices to maximize minimize misuse. Obviously, the best practice is to have a clearly defined policy within the highest levels of senior management endorsing that. So something that comes from the CFO or the chief operations officer or the chairman of the company, very important to do that. And the big debate out there, which surprisingly we see a lot, is do we allow personal spend in all cases? While I think it's debatable whether you can outright mandate a program or not, I think it is appropriate to be able to say that you can prohibit personal spend in all cases. So clearly, if somebody rents a movie, then they can do an out-of-pocket expense for that. That's okay. But using a corporate card program for personal use may drive your charge volume, but the credit losses and the problems you have generally outweigh the use of that. Also include strongly and clearly worded disciplinary consequences for misuse. That's something that sounds fairly obvious, but you know what we see as the best-in-class wording of a T&E policy is to say failure to comply with this policy will result in termination of card privileges and or other disciplinary actions, including possible termination. A lot of people just leave that T&E policy to say loss of card privileges, and people will kind of respond to that with a so what. So make sure that there's a little bit more teeth to that in terms of the T&E policy. The next thing is establish visibility in that policy and say right in the policy that we do conduct audits on a frequent basis so that people realize that there's a back-end audit that takes place. And we'll talk about some real quick hit audit best practices to identify some misuse. This one is not as major, but it's worth mentioning just as an example that comes top of mind. It was a very large company that had city caps for each one of their hotels. So in New York, you know, the maximum you could spend is, let's say, $300, and in other counties of New York, those caps were different. And it went down to the county and the city level across the entire country. So that was a very, very large database with a different hotel cap and a different meal per diem for almost every single, not every city, but every subset of a metropolitan area. Well, that's well and good, and that's very thorough. Consider the fact that what happened with this organization is they implemented that hotel cap and per diem, which was very difficult. People had to always look up the policy to see where that was or build it into the travel booking tool. However, as time went by with inflation and other shifts in the industry, those expenses changed, and you ended up having people constantly being out of policy. Now, if you're constantly out of policy and constantly getting exceptions because the city caps are too low, then one would argue, what good is that policy altogether? And perhaps what we're seeing is less non-compliance with prescribed hotel caps and per diems if people have a more simple, broad base. I'm not saying a $55 per diem for everybody across the entire country, or a $200 hotel cap across the entire company or country, but something a little bit more or less granular than something so detailed. The next thought is coordinate with HR. Obviously, a corporate card is a corporate asset of such, and I think that sometimes there's a little bit of an overlook with how far you can go in working with HR to maximize or to minimize misuse. One of the things that most organizations have every year, which we all know and love, are a mandatory compliance training each year. So you may have an ethics, a diversity, what have you, mandatory online training each year. Include your T&E policy as one of those training modules. And at the end, after they've read through the policy, answered a few test questions, and go to get their certificate that they've completed, also include an attestation checkbox at the end. By checking that box, you agree to abide by the T&E policy, and that tends to get much more legs and more enforceability behind that when you go that extra step to get employees to take that step during their compliance training. Also, consider this, including prompt filing of expenses in your employees' goals and performance evaluation. I'll give you one example. You may have a high-performing sales individual, and their comp plan may be you meet goal, you do pretty well, you exceed goal by X percent, you do really well, you knock it out of the park, you do phenomenally well. That in one company, there were some high-performing employees that were on the cusp of doing 100% of goal versus exceeding expectations, and that boiled down to some pretty significant money. However, those few were also the ones who were, because they were traveling, not doing their expense reports on time, not paying their corporate card bills. As a result of that, what happened was when it came down to the fine nuance of them being on the cusp, the fact that expense reporting, prompt filing was in abiding by the T&E policy was in their goals, not so much on the quantitative goals, but on the how we behave goals, that actually made an impact on that employee's compensation as a result of that. So it's taken very seriously by some companies, and by putting that in, you can actually affect behavior for the ones that may be the worst offenders. Also, just a key obvious but important thing is during the manager's checklist for a terminated employee, in addition to collecting the BlackBerry, their laptop, et cetera, make sure that you collect the employee's corporate card as part of that HR transition checklist. And also, whenever possible, encourage that departing employee to file their electronic expense report before they turn in their laptop, et cetera, because we found that the manual expense report that has to be done as a result of doing that after the fact, although sometimes unavoidable, may result in some impacts on your program, whether it's credit losses or just lower pay on your rebate calculation, not to mention the inconvenience. So now when we get into the last part, let's talk about audit best practices. Here's some quick hits. You can look at your MIS and identify weekend spend. That may take some custom queries, but when you see spend, it's a good place to look a little deeper. It's either a very dedicated employee or someone who may be going to Home Depot on the weekends. Also look at spike in activity. Leverage your card provider's activity month over month by individual. If you have somebody who has a $500 in expenses or no expenses month after month and then there's a spike, take take a little deeper look. It's a lot more efficient to be able to take a look at some of these indicators than just doing spot checks. Also look at a peer group comparison or a vertical analysis. In other words, if you have one group that, if you have a sales organization, again, that is divided into regions, if one region's percent of expenses is higher than the other, that may be the it may be characteristic of that region, or it may be characteristic of an individual or something else that's in that organization. And you can also do that in terms of functional area comparisons, as I just said, within sales. Also look at inactive ghost accounts. I'll give you one example of a very large company had a very complex T&E program with 60 to 75 central air bills, basically a central air bill for every single location. That's well and good. I question kind of the reason why they would do that. But as time goes on, you tend to kind of forget about all 75 of those central air bills, and they start to become dormant as people come and go. That is tends itself to misuse very quickly. If there's an inactive ghost account, somebody may use that, and they could use it for personal spend. So make sure you constantly monitor your central air bills. Same thing would go with meeting cards. Also, another good opportunity is to look at consistently missing receipts. That's fairly obvious. And also look at transaction decline reports. Your card provider typically can give you a report that shows declines and why the card was declined. If you see that there's an individual who has declined reports over or declined transactions over and over again, you may take a look at that and see that they're actually putting personal spend on the card elsewhere. We uncovered that with a university with one employee who was actually attempting to do liquor store and pay rent with their corporate T&E card. Now, it was blocked in those categories, so they were declined, but as they looked at that decline report, they started to see some other things that were questionable as well. So that's a good indicator. Also, compare your canceled cards against your terminated employees. The canceled card report comes from your corporate card provider, and the terminated employees also come from HR. Also, take a look at probation employees. That may not be something that can be readily shared within the organization, but if you give HR access to reporting, they can monitor the spend activity of some of the employees who are on probation. Now, that can be, it can manifest itself two different ways. One where an employee who's on probation who's decided that they're probably going to leave doesn't do expense reports on time, so you'll see some aging on that side. Or on the flip side, you'll see somebody who's about to leave, and all of a sudden you see an inordinate amount of expense reports or high amount or high dollars in expenses. So some real quick ways to do that. So when we cover all of that, the one last thing in terms of best practices and where do you go to do an advanced best practice set, some clients have actually, or some organizations have actually created an infraction database. So in addition to creating or leveraging your card provider's reports and your expense reporting provider's reports, you can also do some very simple data entry to start to build a profile and start to use that profile to your benefit. Again, some of this can be derived right straight out of your card reporting, but if you put what we're seeing is people using an employee ID, the chart of accounts, you know, their default code, like the cost center, department code, et cetera, the manager's ID, the date of the infraction, a consistent infraction coding system. So let's say, personal retail spend, if you haven't blocked retail spend or something to that effect. What you can do then is, as you start to evolve that database, you can start to then create trends. You can start looking at the manager ID and see how many infractions are showing up under certain managers and see if you can address it from that perspective, from a cultural team perspective. There's a number of things you can do just based on that holistic, very simple data. So something to consider if you really want to get deep into audit and compliance. So basically, we have a few minutes left. Just wanted to highlight that these are just some very quick and very simple implementable best practices. We're not talking about boiling the ocean here, but just things that you can walk away with and hopefully get some major benefit in terms of driving compliance, maximizing your rebate, as well as identifying misuse and overall maximizing spend capture. So with that, just a quick profile of who we are before we open this up to Q&A. BMO, Spend and Payment Solutions, is basically has been around for almost 200 years now. In 1984, Bank of Montreal purchased Harris Bank, based out of Chicago, which is our federally chartered U.S. entity. And in 2010, about a year and a half ago, BMO Financial Group also purchased Diners Club North America, which is a MasterCard program, which now brings to bear a real powerful solution into the marketplace, where previously Diners Club was strong in the T&E space and in the private sector and globally, and BMO had a very strong footprint in the P-Card public sector in Canada. Combining those two into the best of breed of both products gives you a branding option of either BMO-branded, Harris-branded, or Diners Club-branded cards with MasterCard acceptance for all. Also, BMO Financial Group offers a wide variety of diversified financial services. We were just voted recently as one of the five top most trusted banks in the world. We consist of BMO Bank of Montreal, Nesbitt Burns, Capital Markets, and Harris Bank. And you can see the rest of the information down there. We have about 8 million clients, 38,000 employees, and very stable and growing financial institutions.